"Tell me what to do," Angel said. But Elizabeth had no breath to do so. She gasped, but drew in her breath sharply again, her legs coming up. She moaned louder, her face contorting and turning bright red. Angel didn't stop to think about modesty. She pulled the quilt back.
"Oh, Elizabeth, it's coming, darling. I can see the head."
Angel supported the child as Elizabeth gave one last push. Angel went down on her knees, the newborn baby in her arms, squalling.
"A boy! Elizabeth, a boy! And he's perfect. 10 fingers, 10 toes.
She got up, trembling with exhilaration and wonder. Elizabeth wept in joy as Angel placed her son on her chest. A few moments later, with the last contractions, she relaxed completely, exhausted.
"Tie the cord with the twine before you cut it," Elizabeth said wearily, and smiled.
"He has good lungs."
"Yes, he certainly does."
Angel washed the baby carefully before wrapping him in a soft blanket and giving him to his mother. He suckled immediately, and Elizabeth smiled contentedly. Pouring warm water into a pan, Angel washed Elizabeth carefully, making every effort not to hurt her, but hurt she did, though Elizabeth didn't complain. Bending down, she kissed Elizabeth's cheek.
"Thank you," she whispered to the already sleeping woman.
Angel went out quietly. Everyone was standing in the other room, waiting.
"You have a beautiful new son, John. Congratulations."
"Praise the Lord."
He wilted into his chair.
"What'd you say his name was?"
Angel laughed, all the pent-up tension gone.
"Well, I don't know, John. I think you're supposed to decide that."
Everyone laughed, John included, blushing beet red. Shaking his head, he went into the bedroom. Miriam and the children filed in quietly behind him. Michael smiled at her in a way that made her heart race.
"Your eyes are shining," he said.
She was so full of emotion, she couldn't speak. His expression was so endearing, full of so much promise. She loved him so much she felt consumed with it. When he came to her, she lifted her face so he could brush his mouth lightly against hers.
"Oh, Michael," she said, putting her arms around him.
"Someday," he said. Then went cold at his cruel blunder. He held her more tightly.
Angel knew what he was thinking. They would never have a child. He drew back slightly, but she couldn't look up at him, not even when he cupped her face.
"Amanda, I'm sorry," he said softly. "I didn't mean..."
"Don't apologize, Michael."
Why hadn't he thought first before saying anything?
"I'll tell them we're going home."
He left her long enough to congratulate the Altmans. The baby was beautiful. Elizabeth took his hand. "Amanda was wonderful. Tell her I'd be honored to tend her when her time comes."
"I'll tell her," he said dully, knowing he couldn't.
They walked home in silence. He watched her bank the fire.
"Elizabeth said you were wonderful."
"She was magnificent," Angel said. "She could have managed with no one to help her."
She glanced up at him with a sad smile.
"It's what being a woman is all about, isn't it?
Miriam called having children a divine privilege." She looked away. John's seed was planted in fertile ground.
"Amanda," he said, putting his hand beneath her arm to stop her.
"Don't say anything, Michael, please."
She didn't fight him when he drew her into his arms. He held her firmly, his hand spread over the back of her head. He wanted to take away the hurt and didn't know how.
"Christmas is only a few days away."
"I didn't remember until tonight at the Altmans'."
Elizabeth and Miriam had already decorated their cabin with pine boughs and red ribbons. Leah and Ruthie had made a nativity scene with corn husk dolls. Angel hadn't thought to do anything. Duke had always said Christmas was just like any other day, and you slept 8 hours of it. Mama had made something of Christmas during those early years. Even when they lived on the docks and had little food and no money, Mama treated Christmas as a holy day. No men were allowed in the shack on Christmas. Mama used to tell her what Christmas was like when she was a little girl. Angel didn't like her to talk about it, because it always made Mama cry. "Christmas," Angel said, and drew back from Michael. He saw her anguish and felt he was the cause of it. "Amanda." She looked up at him, unable to make out his face in the darkness. "What do I give you for Christmas, Michael? What do I give you when the only thing you really want is a child?" Her chest rose and fell rapidly as she struggled against the emotion rising in her. I wish...
"Don't," he said brokenly.
She clenched her fist. "I wish Duke hadn't ruined me. I wish no one else had ever touched me. I wish I was like Miriam."
"I love you."
When she turned away, he yanked her back, pulling her into his arms. "I love you." He kissed her and felt the way she melted into him, clinging to him so desperately. "Michael, I wish I was whole. I wish I was whole for you."
God, why? John and Elizabeth have 6 children. Will I never beget even one on my wife? Why did you allow it to happen this way?
"It doesn't matter," he said over and over. "It doesn't matter." But both of them knew it did.
Chapter 28. From Paul's Letter to the Philippians, Chapter 2, Verse 3. "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind let each of you regard one another as more important than himself." Paul came to the Altman's Christmas gathering. Angel's stomach sank at the sight of him, wondering what barbs he would aim at her this time. She stayed away from him, determined that nothing would spoil this Christmas. She had never had a real Christmas, and this family wanted to include her. If Paul called her a harlot to her face, she would take it and say nothing. Besides, she knew he wouldn't do it loudly enough for the others to hear. To her surprise, he left her alone. He seemed just as determined to stay away from her. He brought presents for the children, small brown sacks of candy from the new general store. They were delighted, all except Miriam, who looked furious when he handed her one. "Thank you, Uncle Paul," she said tartly and kissed his cheek. A muscle jerked in his jaw as she turned away. Angel waited until after the huge dinner she and Miriam had prepared before dispensing the gifts from her and Michael. She had worked for 2 days on the rag dolls for Leah and Ruthie, and she held her breath as they unwrapped them. Their squeals made her laugh. The boys were equally exuberant about the slingshots Michael had made for them. A target was immediately set up outside. Miriam opened her package carefully and held up the dried flower garland Angel had made. She fingered the satin ribbons streaming from the back. "It's beautiful, Amanda," she said, tears welling in her eyes. Angel smiled. "I kept thinking of you running down the hill through all those wildflowers. It seemed appropriate." Miriam took her hair down quickly and shook it out so that it flowed thick and curling about her face and shoulders and down her back. She placed the garland on her head. "How does it look?"
"Wild and beautiful," Michael said. Paul got up and went outside. Miriam's smile dimmed slightly.
"He's such a dolt," she said under her breath.
"Miriam," Elizabeth said in surprise, the baby against her shoulder. What a thing to say. Miriam didn't look the least bit repentant as she glared out the door at Paul. She took the garland off and laid it in her lap. I love it, and I'm going to wear it instead of a veil on my wedding day. When darkness fell, the family gathered around the fire and sang carols. John handed Michael the Bible without saying what he wanted read. Michael went straight to the Christmas story. Angel listened, her arms clasped around her raised knees. Ruth sleepily nudged her. Smiling, Angel welcomed her to her lap. Ruth wiggled until she was comfortable, her head resting against Angel's breast. Angel stroked her hair. If I love a child not my own this much, how much more would I have loved my own? Michael's voice was rich and deep. Everyone was silent, watching him. Angel remembered her mother telling her the story of the baby Jesus being born in a manger, and the shepherds and the three kings coming to worship him. But from Michael's lips, it was full of beauty and mystery. For all that, she couldn't find joy in it, not as these others did. What kind of father would let his own son be born for the single purpose of being nailed to a cross? The dark voice came unexpectedly. You know what kind of father, Angel. You had one just like him. She shivered. Looking away from Michael, she saw John standing in the shadows beside Elizabeth. His hand was on her shoulder. All fathers weren't like Alex Stafford. Some were like John Altman. She looked at Michael again. He would be a wonderful father, too. Strong, loving, forgiving if it came to that. He had read her the story of the prodigal son once, not long after bringing her back from paradise. Should his child stray, he would be a father to welcome him home again. He wouldn't be like the one who had turned her mother away. Michael finished reading and closed the Bible. When he raised his head, he looked straight into her eyes. She smiled. He smiled back, but there was a question in his eyes. Miriam, John said softly. She went to her father, and he said something to her. Elizabeth handed her the baby. Miriam carried him back and placed him in Michael's arms. The baby raised its hand, and Michael brushed his finger lightly against the tiny palm, smiling as the child clasped it tightly. So, John, he said, have you and Elizabeth come up with a name yet? We have. Benjamin Michael, after you. Michael looked stunned and then deeply moved. His eyes glistened with unshed tears. Miriam put her hands on his shoulders and leaned down to kiss his cheek. We hope he'll grow into the name. Angel's heart twisted as she looked at Michael holding the baby, and Miriam with her hand still resting on his shoulder. They looked like they belonged together. From the darkness outside, Paul was thinking the same thing. The rose bushes Michael had brought home to Angel bloomed early. She touched the scarlet buds and thought of her mother. She was so much like May. She was good for growing flowers, looking pretty, and giving a man pleasure. Beyond that, what good was she? Michael should have children. He wants children. She knew on Christmas night what she should do, but it was unbearable to even think of leaving him, of living without him. She wanted to stay here and forget the look in his eyes when he held Benjamin. She wanted to cling to him and bask in the happiness he gave her. It was that very selfishness that made her realize she didn't deserve him. Michael had given her everything. She had been empty, and he had filled her to overflowing with his love. She had betrayed him, and he had taken her back and forgiven her. He had sacrificed pride to love her. How could she discard his needs after that? How could she live with herself, knowing that she had ignored the desires of his heart? What of Michael? What was best for him? The dark voice spoke often, Stay. Don't you deserve some happiness after all the years of living in misery? He says he loves you, doesn't he? So let him prove it. She couldn't listen any more. She closed her mind to it and thought of Michael instead. And she thought of Miriam, sister of her heart. She thought of the children Miriam and Michael could have, dark and beautiful, strong and loving, down through generations to come. She reminded herself that nothing could come from her. If she stayed, Michael would remain faithful until he died, and that would be the end to him. She couldn't let that be. When Michael told her he was going into town with Paul, she made her decision. John had remarked only yesterday that the town had grown so big, a stage came twice a day. It traveled on the high road, not 2 miles from the cabin, just beyond the line of hills. She still had the gold she had earned from Sam Teal and Joseph Hochschild. Michael had insisted she keep it for herself. It was enough to get her to San Francisco and keep her for a time. She would not think beyond that. I have to think of what's best for Michael. When Michael came in from the fields, she had a sumptuous venison dinner ready for him. The cabin was bedecked with flowers, the mantel, the table, the bed. Michael looked around, bemused. "What are we celebrating?" "Life," she said, and kissed him. She drank in the sight of him, setting every angle of his face and body to memory. She wanted him desperately, loved him so much. Would he ever know how much? She couldn't tell him. If she did, he would come looking for her. He would bring her back. Better that he think her carnal and base. But she would have this last night to remember. He would be part of her no matter where she was, and even if he never knew it, she would carry the sweet memories to her grave. "Take me up to the hill again, Michael. Take me to the place where you showed me the sunrise." He saw the hunger in her eyes. "It's cool tonight." "Not too cold." He could deny her nothing, but there was a strange uneasiness in the pit of his stomach. Something was wrong. He took the quilts from the bed and led the way. Perhaps she would talk to him and tell him what preyed on her mind. Maybe she would open up to him finally. But her mood changed, swinging from pensive to abandoned. She ran to the top of the hill ahead of him and spun around, her arms spread wide. All around her, crickets sang, and the soft breeze stirred the grasses. "It's beautiful, isn't it? The vastness of it all. I'm utterly insignificant."
"Not to me."
"Yes," she said, turning to him. "Even to you." He frowned, and she turned again. "There shall be no other gods before me," she cried out to the heavens. "None but you, my lord." She turned and looked at him. "None but you, Michael Hosea." He frowned. "Are you mocking me, beloved?" "Never," she said, and meant it. She took her hair down. It spilled over her shoulders and back, white in the moonlight. "Do you remember reading to me of the Shulamite bride dancing for her husband?" He couldn't breathe as he watched her in the moonlight. Every movement drew his gaze to her and made him aware. When he tried to take hold of her, she moved away again, her arms outstretched in invitation. Her hair floated about her, and her voice came husky and enticing in the wind. "I'll do anything for you, Michael. Anything." And suddenly, he knew what she was doing. She was saying goodbye, just as she had the last time. She was deadening his mind with physical pleasure. When she came close again, Michael caught hold of her. "Why are you doing this?" "For you," she said, pulling his head down and kissing him. Digging his fingers into her hair, he slanted his mouth across hers. He wanted to consume her. Her hands were like flame on his body. "God, I won't let her go again. I can't.
She moved against him, and he had no thought except for her, and it was not enough.
God, why are you doing this to me again? Do you give only to take away?
Michael, Michael, she breathed, and he tasted the saltiness of his own tears on her cheeks.
You need me. He could see her moonlit face. You need me. Say it, Tirza. Say it.
Let her go, beloved.
God, no. Don't ask it of me.
Give her to me.
No.
They clung to one another, seeking solace in sweet oblivion.
But sweet oblivion doesn't last.
Michael held her tightly when it passed away. He tried to hold on to all of it, but they were two separate beings again. He had not the strength to hold them together forever. She was trembling violently, whether from cold or spent passion, he didn't know. He didn't ask. He drew the quilt around them both, and still felt her resolve like a raw wound. It was growing colder, and they needed to return. They dressed in silence, both tormented, both pretending not to be. She came to him again and put her arms around his waist, pressing herself against him as a child would, looking for comfort. He closed his eyes against the fear uncurling in the pit of his stomach. I love her, Lord. I can't give her up.
Michael, beloved, would you have her hang on her cross forever?
Michael let out a shuddering sigh. When she lifted her face, he saw something in it that made him want to weep. She loved him. She really loved him. And yet there was something else in her moonlit face, a haunting sadness he couldn't take away, an emptiness he could never fill. He remembered her anguished words on the night Benjamin was born. I wish I was whole. He couldn't make her so. Lifting her, he held her cradled in his arms. She put her arm around his neck and kissed him. He closed his eyes. Lord, if I give her up to you now, will you ever give her back to me?
No answer came.
Lord, please.
The wind stirred softly, but there was only silence. Angel walked out to the barn with Michael the next morning and watched him saddle his horse.
When do you expect to be back?
He glanced back at her enigmatically.
As soon as I can.
Leading the horse out of the stall, he put his arm around her shoulders. She smiled up at him. Stopping, he drew her into his arms and kissed her. She kissed him back, making the most of the last opportunity she would ever have. When Michael's fingers dug into her shoulders painfully, she was surprised.
I love you, he said roughly. I will always love you.
She wondered at his vehemence and touched his face tenderly. Take care of yourself. He didn't smile.
You do likewise.
He mounted and rode away. She didn't go back into the house until he disappeared over the hill. She wasn't going to leave until everything was properly in order. She made the bed, washed the dishes and put them away, and shook out the hearth rug. The flowers were still fresh. She banked the fire so that it would still be going when Michael returned home. She jumped when someone tapped at the door. It was Miriam.
"What are you doing here?" Angel asked in dismay.
Miriam was taken aback.
Weren't you expecting me?
No.
Well, that's odd. Michael came by the house on his way to Paul's and said this was a good day for a visit.
Angel turned away and went back to her carpet bag lying open on the bed. She quickly stuffed in one of Michael's shirts and then folded a dress on top of it. Miriam watched her.
Michael didn't tell me you were going anywhere.
He doesn't know. She snapped the bag shut and lifted it. I'm leaving him, Miriam.
What? Miriam said, looking at her as though she had sprouted horns. Again?
I'm leaving him for good this time.
But why?
Because I have to.
Angel looked around the cabin one last time. She had been happy here, but that didn't mean she should stay. She went quietly out the door. Miriam came after her.
Wait!
She kept pace as Angel headed for the hills.
Amanda, I don't understand.
You don't have to. Just go home, Miriam. Say goodbye to everyone for me.
But where will you go?
West, east? It doesn't matter. I haven't decided.
Then why are you in such a hurry? Stay here and talk things over with Michael. Whatever he's done to make you want to leave...
Angel couldn't have her friend believing Michael was in the wrong.
Miriam, Michael has never done a thing wrong in his life. Then why are you doing this?
I don't want to talk about it. Angel kept walking, wishing Miriam would give up and leave her alone.
You love him. I know you do. If you leave without any reason, what's he going to think?
Angel knew what he would think. He would believe she had gone back to her old life. Maybe it would be better if he did believe that. It would keep him from looking for her. Only she need know that she would never go back to prostitution, even if it meant starving to death. Miriam argued and pleaded all the way to the road, and only stopped because she was finally out of breath. Angel paced, looking for the stagecoach. It was just past noon. It should come soon. She couldn't bear this waiting much longer. Why had Michael told Miriam to come for a visit, today of all days?
I thought Michael was so perfect, Miriam said miserably. But he can't be if you're running away from him like this.
He's everything he seems and more, Miriam. I swear on my life he's done nothing to hurt me. He's done nothing but love me from the beginning, even when I hated the sight of him. Miriam's eyes swam.
Then how can you leave him now?
Because I don't belong with him. I never did. Seeing that Miriam was going to say even more, she put her hand on the girl's arm to stop her. Please.
Miriam, I can't have children. Do you know what that means to a man like him? He wants children. He deserves them. I was ruined for all that long ago.
She struggled with her pain. I'm begging you, Miriam. Don't make this any more difficult than it already is.
I'm going because it's best for Michael. Try to understand, she said brokenly.
Miriam, I have to think of what's best for him. The coach was coming at last. Angel stepped quickly into the road and waved to the driver to stop. As he drew rein on the six horses, she worked the wedding ring off her finger and held it out to Miriam.
Give this back to him for me. It belonged to his mother.
Tears pouring down her cheeks, Miriam shook her head and wouldn't take it. Angel reached out and took her hand, put the ring into it, and closed the girl's fingers around it. Turning away quickly, she handed her carpet bag up to the driver. He began lashing it down with the other cases. Angel looked at her friend's pale, distraught face.
You love him, don't you, Miriam?
Yes, I love him. You know I do. She stepped closer.
You're wrong to do this. Wrong, Amanda.
Angel hugged her tightly.
Help me be strong.
She held her a moment longer.
You're very dear to me.
She let go and stepped quickly up into the coach.
Don't go, Miriam cried, putting her hands on the window opening.
The coach started moving. Angel looked down at her, fighting against the pain.
You said you loved him, Miriam.
Then love him, and give him the children I can't. Miriam let go in shock. Her face went fiery red and then white.
No. Oh, no.
She started running after the coach, but it was picking up speed and not slowing down.
Wait, Amanda. Amanda.
But it was already too late. Dust swirled back, choking her, and by the time she could run again, the stagecoach was too far down the road for her to catch up. Standing in the middle of the road, she looked at the wedding ring in her hand and burst into tears. The last thing Paul expected to see when he and Michael rode toward his cabin late that afternoon was Miriam coming out his door. His heart jumped at the sight of her, and then bounded around in his chest like a rabbit when she ran toward him. What was Michael going to think about her being here? But she ran to Michael, not him. Paul's stomach dropped like a stone. Michael dismounted.
"Amanda's gone," Miriam said, her face pale and tear-streaked.
She was dusty and disheveled.
"I've been waiting here all day, Michael. I knew you would come by Paul's first. You've got to go after her. She took the morning stage. You have to bring her back."
Paul stayed on his horse. So Angel was gone again. For all her vows, she had left Michael. Just as he expected. He ought to feel glad about it. When Michael put his hand on Miriam's shoulder, a hot and completely unexpected surge of jealousy flashed through him. Michael was pale and strained. "I'm not going after her, Miriam."
"Have you and Amanda both gone mad?" Miriam cried out, tears welling in her dark eyes. "You don't understand." How could she tell him? Oh, God, what was she to do? She felt Paul watching them and couldn't tell Michael everything Amanda had said to her in confidence. "You've got to go after her. Now, if you don't, you may never find her again."
"I'm not going to look for her. Not this time."
"Not this time?"
"He means he's gone after her before and it hasn't done him any good," Paul said. "She hasn't changed since the day he met her." Miriam turned on him, her face livid.
"Stay out of this. Go hide in your cabin. Go stick your head in the sand like you always do."
Paul drew back, shocked by her fury. Miriam turned back to Michael, clutching the front of his shirt.
"Michael, please go after her before it's too late."
He took her hands.
"I can't." "Miriam, if she wants to come back, she'll come back. If she doesn't, then she doesn't."
Miriam put her hands over her face and wept. Michael looked up at Paul and saw that he didn't intend to comfort the girl. Sighing heavily, he took Miriam in his arms. Her whole body was shaking with her sobs. Paul stared down at them and felt a stab of pain go through his middle. This was what he wanted, wasn't it? This was what he had planned. Hadn't he been waiting for that witch to leave so Michael would turn to Miriam and have the wife he deserved? So why was it that he had never felt so lonely? Whatever he had thought he wanted, he couldn't look at them holding onto one another now. It hurt too much. Turning his horse, he left them alone. Chapter 29. From Revelation, Chapter 6, Verse 8. "Behold a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed him." San Francisco was no longer a mean little town beside a bay, but a city spreading across the windswept hills. Happy Valley was no longer a tent encampment, but a community of houses. Many of the ships that had been dragged ashore and turned into stores, saloons, and boarding houses had burned down. They'd been replaced by frame structures and brick buildings. Planked sidewalks now lined the muddy streets. The ferryman stood with his face into the wind. "Every time the city burns, they just build her back up better than ever," he told her as they crossed the bay. He warned her about the brackish water from shallow wells and said she would find better lodging up the hill away from the docks. Angel was too tired to venture far, and ended up in a small hotel on the water. The smell of the sea and garbage reminded her of the dock shack of her childhood. It seemed 100 years ago. She had supper in the small dining room and suffered the bold stares of 12 young men. She ate the stew to fill the void in her stomach, but the one in her heart remained. I did the right thing in leaving Michael. I know I did. Returning to her small room, she tried to sleep on the narrow bed. The room was cold, and she couldn't get warm. She curled into a tight ball beneath the blanket and thought longingly of Michael's solid warmth beside her. She couldn't stop thinking about him. Was it only 3 days ago she had danced for him in the moonlight? What did he think of her now? Did he hate her? Did he curse her? If she could cry, she might feel better, but she had no tears. She held herself tightly, achingly. Closing her eyes, she tried to see Michael's face, but the image wasn't enough. She couldn't touch him. She couldn't feel his arms around her. Rising, she rummaged through her carpet bag to find his shirt. She lay down on the bed again and pressed her face into the wool fabric Michael had worn, breathing in the scent of his body. "Oh, Mama," she whispered into the darkness, "the pain does make you want to die." But a still, small voice inside her kept saying over and over again, "Live. Keep going. Don't give up." What was she going to do? She had a little gold left, but it wasn't going to last long. The stagecoach ride, lodgings, and the ferry ride had been more expensive than she'd expected. The going rate for this foul little hotel was far too dear. What gold she had left would keep her for another 2 or 3 days at the most. After that, she would have to find a way to earn a living. She slept, finally. The night was filled with strange, disconcerting dreams. She awakened several times, shaking violently. It was as though some malevolent force were close by, waiting. Angel packed her few possessions and left in the morning. She wandered for hours through the streets of San Francisco. Portsmouth Square had changed dramatically. The shanty in which she had lived was gone. So were all the others, as well as the tents that had spread like a plague around the plaza. Booths were now set up, giving the square the feel of a grand bazaar. She browsed through goods from around the world. There were several brothels, one with the elegant air of New Orleans. On the outer edge of the square were thriving hostelries, saloons, and casinos. The Parker House, Denizens Exchange, the Crescent City, and the Empire now rose from the grime Angel remembered. On the southwest corner of Clay Street was Brown's City Hotel. She passed doctors and dentists' offices, attorneys and business offices, surveying and engineering offices. She saw several new banks and a large brokerage firm. There was even a public schoolhouse with children playing tag in the yard. Angel stood watching them for a while, thinking of little Ruth and Leah and the boys. She missed them so much. At Clay Street, men were queued up at the post office, waiting news of mail. On the corner of Washington and Grant was a new Chinese laundry. Workers scrubbed clothing in big wash tubs, while others stacked fresh linens into baskets. Balancing these on bamboo poles, they set off at a run to make deliveries. By midday, Angel was famished, weary, and no closer to knowing what she was going to do to make a living. The only thing that came to mind was going back to what she knew. Every time she passed a brothel, she knew she could walk in the door and have food and shelter. She could have physical comfort. All she had to do was sell her body again. And betray Michael. He'll never know, Angel.
I'll know.
A man gave her a curious look as he passed. Would she turn into a mad woman who talked to herself? A miner stopped her and asked her to marry him. She pulled her arms free and told him to leave her alone. He said he had a cabin in the Sierras and he needed a wife. She told him to look elsewhere and hurried on. The crush of people made her more and more nervous. Where were they all going? What did they do for a living?
Her head was throbbing. Maybe it was the hunger. Maybe it was worrying about what she was going to do when her gold ran out. Maybe it was knowing she was weak and would probably go right back to being a harlot just so she could keep body and soul together. What am I going to do? God, I don't know what to do.
Go into that cafe and rest.
Angel looked up the street and saw a small cafe. Sighing, she walked toward it and went in. She chose a table in the back corner and pushed her carpet bag behind her feet. Rubbing her temples, she wondered where she was going to spend the night. Someone banged on the table a few feet away from her, making her jump. A wiry, bearded man hollered, "What's taking so long? I've been waiting near an hour. Where's the steak I ordered?"
A small, red-headed man hurried out of the back room and tried to quiet the angry patron with a whispered explanation of the delay, but that only incensed the man further. Face red, he grabbed the smaller man and held him up to his face.
"Under the weather, ha! Huh? Drunk is what you mean."
He shoved the little man back, banging him into another table. The patron headed for the door, slamming it behind him so hard the windows rattled. The little man ducked into the back room again, probably to escape the scrutiny of the dozen patrons still waiting for service and food. Several others got up and left. Angel didn't know whether to follow their lead or not. She was exhausted and without prospects, and sitting here was as good as sitting anywhere else. She didn't want to go out into the rush for a while anyway. Missing a meal wouldn't kill her. Three more men gave up on waiting to find out whether food was coming or not. Angel and four others remained. The little man appeared again, his smile tense and forced.
"We got biscuits and beans."
The four remaining men vacated the premises with disgruntled remarks about having had enough of that fare to last a lifetime. The little man's shoulders sagged in defeat. Not noticing Angel in the corner, he spoke to the air.
"Well, that does it, Lord. I'm out of business."
He walked to the front door, flipped the sign over, and put his forehead against the wall. Angel felt sorry for him. She knew what it was like to be down on her luck.
"Shall I leave?" she asked quietly.
He turned, blushing beet red.
"I didn't know you was there. You want a biscuit and some beans?"
"Please." He disappeared momentarily. When he returned, he set a dish down in front of her and backed off. The biscuit was hard as stone, and the beans were burned. Frowning, she looked up at him.
"Coffee?" he asked, and poured her some in a mug. It was so strong, Angel grimaced.
"Mister, you need a new cook," she said with a dry smile, setting the mug down and pushing the plate aside.
"You asking for employment?"
Her eyes shot wide open.
"Me?"
He took note of her surprise and looked her over again.
"I guess not."
She felt the heat coming up into her face. Did her past show that clearly? Was it emblazoned on her forehead for the whole world to see? Had knowing Michael a year made no difference in her at all? Her back stiffened. "As a matter of fact, I was looking for work." She gave a short laugh. "And though I'm far from the greatest cook in the world, I think I can do better than this." She winced at the congealing mass of greasy beans on her plate.
"In that case, you're hired."
He slammed the coffee pot down and stuck his hand out before she could utter a word.
"My name's Virgil Harper, ma'am."
She was trying to take in the fact that she had work, and that it had fallen right into her lap like a ripe plum from heaven. How had it come about? One minute she was frantic about what she was going to do to make a living. The next she was employed by a banty rooster.
"Hold on," she said, putting a hand up. "I'll need to find a place to live first. I may not even stay in San Francisco."
"You don't need to look for nothing, lady. You can have the cook's quarters as soon as he moves his things out, and he's packing right now. Your room is next to mine above the kitchen, real cozy. Good bed, chest of drawers."
Her eyes narrowed.
She should have known there was a catch. "It's got a good lock on the door," he said. "You can check it out first if you like. Can you fix pies? We got a lot of requests for pie." She could scarcely catch her breath, he was going so fast. "How much will this room cost me?" "Nothing," he said, genuinely surprised. "Comes with the job. Now what about the pies? Can you bake or not?" "Yes, I can bake bread and pies," she said. Elizabeth and Miriam had taught her everything they knew. "If you can get me flour, apples, berries..." Harper threw his head back and his hands in the air. "Lord Jesus, I love you." He spun around and stamped his feet up and down. "I love you. I love you." Angel stared at him, jumping around like a grasshopper, and wondered if the poor man had gone completely off his rocker. He saw her staring and laughed. "I've been down on my knees all week wondering what I was going to do. You know what that drunk did? He relieved himself in the soup and served it all day Monday. He told me that night. I thought I'd be hanging from a post by morning, and he just laughed and said he was seasoning the broth. I won't even tell you what he did this morning." She looked down at the bowl in front of her. "Did he do anything to the beans?" "Nothing that I know about." "Why don't I feel reassured?" "Come on in the kitchen, and I'll show you what I got on hand in the way of supplies, and you can see what you can do with them." "What do I call you, ma'am? I didn't even think to ask."
"Hosea," she said. "Mrs. Hosea."
Michael sank the axe deeply into the log. It went straight through and embedded in the block. He gave it a hard tug and freed the blade again. He set up another log and split it with one swing. Over and over, he did the same thing, until sections piled up around the block. He kicked them aside and set up another log. He swung again, harder than before, and the axe sliced clean through, bouncing off the block this time, and narrowly missing his leg. Shaking, Michael dropped the axe and sank to his knees. Sweat was pouring into his eyes. He wiped it away with the back of his hand. He heard something. Squinting into the sun, he saw John sitting on his horse, watching him. Michael hadn't even heard him ride up. "How long you been there?" he asked, chest heaving. "Couple of minutes." Michael tried to get to his feet, but couldn't. As soon as he had stopped the frenzied labor, all his strength had left him. He sank back again and leaned against the block. Glancing up, he gave John a wry smile. "Didn't hear you arrive. What brings you by?" John rested his forearms on the pommel. "You've got enough wood there for two winters. Bring a wagon over and take what you want." The saddle creaked as John dismounted. He came and hunkered down before Michael. "Why don't you go after her?" Michael raked a shaking hand back through his hair. "Leave it be, John." He didn't feel like talking. "Just swallow your pride and get on your horse and go look for her. I'll watch over your place." "It's got nothing to do with pride." "Then what's stopping you?" Michael leaned his head back and took a deep breath. "Good sense." John frowned. "Then it's like Paul said." Michael looked at him. "What did Paul say?" "Nothing much," John hedged. "Michael, women are emotional. Sometimes they do stupid things." She thought this out. It wasn't an impulse. "How do you know that?" Michael raked his hand into his hair. How many times had he gone over the things she had done and said that last night? He could still see her slender body in the moonlight, her pale hair floating about her. He shut his eyes. "I just know." "Miriam blames herself for all this. She won't tell us why she thinks that, but she's mightily convinced of it." "It's got nothing to do with her. You tell her that for me." "I have. She tried to get Paul to go find Amanda for you and bring her back." Michael could well guess the outcome of that conversation. At least Paul had been sensitive enough over the last weeks not to come by and gloat. Paul never liked Angel. "Angel?" John said blankly.
Mara, Amanda, Terza.
Michael's voice cracked. He held his head.
Jesus, he said hoarsely. Jesus.
Angel. She never even trusted him enough to tell him her real name. Or had he been thinking of her as Angel all along without even knowing it? Was that why she left him again? Oh, God. Was that why you wanted me to let her go?
John Altman felt helpless before the younger man's grief. He couldn't even imagine his life without Elizabeth. He had seen how much Michael loved Amanda, and Miriam swore Amanda loved him. He put his hand on Michael's shoulder.
Maybe she'll come back on her own.
His words sounded hollow. Michael didn't even look up.
What can I do to help you get through this?
Nothing, Michael said. How many times had Angel said that very thing? Nothing. Had she felt as though her guts were being ripped out? Had the pain been so immense that even mentioning it made it worse? How many times had he probed her wounds, just as John was doing now, trying to help and only drawing more blood?
I'll come back tomorrow, John said.
Miriam came instead. She sat with him beneath the willow tree and said nothing. He could hear her mind working, the question hanging in the air. Why won't you do something? But she didn't ask. She dug in her pocket and held something out for him. His stomach dropped when he saw his mother's wedding ring in the palm of her hand.
Take it, she said.
He did.
Where did you find it? He asked hoarsely.
Miriam's eyes filled. She gave it to me before getting in the coach. I forgot to give it back to you the first day. Then I was embarrassed.
He made a fist around it.
Thanks.
He didn't ask her anything.
Have you changed your mind, Michael? Are you going to try and find her?
He looked at her steadily.
No, Miriam, and don't ask me again.
Miriam didn't stay long after that. She had said all she could the day Amanda left him, and she had not persuaded him then. Michael knew all the possible motives for Amanda's desertion, but beyond that, beyond comprehension, he knew God's will was working.
Why this way? He cried out in anguish. Why did you tell me to love her if you were only going to take her away from me?
He raged at God and grieved for his wife. He stopped reading his Bible. He stopped praying. He turned inside himself seeking answers. He found none. And he dreamed dark, confusing dreams with forces that were closing in on him. The still, quiet voice didn't speak to him anymore. Not for weeks and months. God was silent and hidden, his purpose a mystery. Life became such a barren wasteland that Michael couldn't bear it anymore, and he cried out, "Why have you forsaken me?" "Beloved, I am always with you, even to the end of time." Michael slowed his frenetic work and sought solace in God's word. "I don't understand anything anymore, Lord. Losing her is like losing half of myself. She loved me. I know she did. Why did you drive her from me?" The answer came to him slowly, with the changing of the seasons. "You shall have no other gods before me."
That couldn't be right.
Michael's anger grew. "When have I worshipped anyone but you?" he raged again. "I've followed you all my life. I've never put anyone before you." Hands fisted, he wept. "I love her, but I never made her my God." In the calm that followed his angry torrent of words, Michael heard, and finally understood. "You became hers."
Angel stood in the middle of the night-shrouded street and watched Harper's Cafe burning. Everything she had worked for over the past 6 months was burning with it. All she had left was the warm gingham dress she was wearing and the stained apron that covered it.
There had been so little warning. Virgil had burst into the kitchen yelling there was a fire. She didn't even have time to ask questions as he pulled her outside. Two buildings were burning a few doors away. Then a breeze came up and swept the fire right down through the remaining buildings on the block. People were running helter-skelter, some in panic, some shouting directions, others gathering and passing water buckets frantically in an attempt to contain the fire, but it was no use.
Ash and smoke filled the air, and the flames leapt higher, bright orange against the darkening evening sky. Helpless, Angel watched the cafe collapse in an explosion of sparks and flame. Virgil wept. Business had been going well. Though their menu was limited, what they offered was excellent, and word had spread quickly. Angel sat down on a barrel someone had rolled from a building. Men had pulled everything they could drag or carry from their buildings. The street was stacked with goods, furniture, sacks. Why hadn't she thought to do the same? She hadn't even thought to run upstairs and pack her things. She could have stuffed everything she had into her carpet bag and made it out in time. When the fire reached the end of the street, it stopped. The breeze died down, and so did the excitement. Up and down the street, people stood in despair, looking at the blaze consuming what remained of their dreams. Virgil sat on the ground, his head in his hands. Depression settled over Angel like a cold, wet blanket. Now what was she going to do? She looked around and saw that others were in the same situation she was. What would Michael do if he were here? She knew he would never give in to despair, and he would do something for these people. But what could she do? One woman, destitute herself. One thing she knew she couldn't do was stand by and watch Virgil sobbing in the street. She sat down beside him in the dirt. As soon as the fire dies, we'll dig through what's left and see if there's anything that can be salvaged. What's the use? I ain't got enough money to rebuild, he sobbed. She put her arm around his shoulders. The land is worth something. Maybe you can get a loan on it and start again with that. They slept against a pile of packs using borrowed blankets. At dawn, they dug through the ash and rubble. Choking on soot, Angel found cast-iron pots and pans. The stove could still be used. The utensils were melted, but many of the dishes were intact. A good scrubbing would make them usable. Face covered with ash, her throat raw from breathing it, Angel rested. She was hungry and tired. Every muscle in her body ached. But at least Virgil was feeling more hopeful, even though he had not yet found them a place to stay. The hotels in the area were already full with paying customers and unlikely to give space in a lobby to those who couldn't. The thought of sleeping in the street with the cold bay mists was daunting, but she supposed things could be worse. Someone had given them a couple more blankets. They worked to clear away the charred wood. Angel collected shards of glass from shattered windows in a bucket, dumping it in a pile to be carted away later. Virgil was pale with exhaustion. I guess we'll have to camp right here until I can get the money to rebuild the place. The priest has a room at the church if you want to stay there. Some of the others are going. No thanks, she said. She would sleep in the mud before she went to a church for help. Virgil nodded toward some men standing in line outside a building across the street. Father Patrick set up a soup kitchen over there. Go get yourself something to eat. I'm not hungry, she lied. She wasn't going to ask a priest for anything. But she desperately needed a drink of water. A few barrels had been put out for drinking. She wanted to wash her face, but the only other water available was in a trough. Sighing, she decided it was probably cleaner than she was. Bending over it, she cupped her hands and washed her face. The water felt refreshing. Hello, Angel. It's been a long, long time. Her heart stopped. She had to be imagining that deep voice. She raised her head slowly, heart pounding, her face dripping wet.
Duke stood before her, his mouth curved in a deadly smile. Chapter 30. From the 23rd Psalm, verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Duke's mocking gaze swept Angel's soiled gingham dress, his mouth curving into a sardonic smile. I've seen you look better, my dear. She froze at the sight of him. When he came close and touched her, she felt faint. It would seem no matter how far you run, you can't get away from me, can you? He looked down over her. You've grown into quite a beautiful woman beneath all that soot. He looked around at the burned-out buildings. Were you working in one of these miserable little hovels? When he looked at her again, Angel found her voice. I was a cook for Harper's Cafe. Her stomach was quivering. A cook? You? He laughed. Oh, that's rich, my dear. What was your specialty? As he spoke, he looked over the men working in the burned-out buildings. I worried about you. I was afraid you would end up with another weakling like Johnny. His eyes came to rest on Virgil digging through the rubble. And you ended up with a little rodent instead. She recognized that dark look and knew it boded no good for Virgil, who had shown her nothing but kindness. Her palms were sweating, but she had to take his attention off the little man who had helped her. Surely you didn't come all the way to California just to find me, you with so many important things to do. Look around you, my dear. There's a fortune to be made here. His smile was taunting. I came to take my share. Virgil saw them and came toward them. Her look didn't warn him away. Quite the contrary, he came all the more quickly. He looked Duke up and down and glanced at her in concern. You all right, ma'am? This man bothering you? What did the poor fool think he could do about it? I'm fine, Virgil. Duke gave him a cold smile. Aren't you going to introduce us, my dear? She did so. Virgil had clearly heard the name before and looked stunned. You know this man? Angel and I are very old and dear friends. Virgil looked at her, and she felt the need to say something more, to try to explain, but there was little she could say. We were acquainted in New York, a long time ago. Not all that long ago, Duke said, his tone possessive. Don't you own that place across the square? Virgil asked. The big one? Indeed, Duke drawled, amused. Have you frequented my tables? I haven't been able to afford it, Virgil said dryly. Shall we go, Angel? Duke said, his hand tightening beneath her elbow. Go? Virgil looked at her. Go where? I don't think that's any of your business, Duke said warningly. Virgil drew himself up to his full 5 feet. It is if she don't want to go with you. Duke laughed. Angel was surprised and touched that Virgil would willingly defend her, even against a man like Duke, who could plainly destroy him without much effort. She felt Duke's fingers bite into her arm, and was afraid what he would do to Virgil if she even hesitated to go with him. I'm sorry, Virgil. The poor little man looked so confused and hurt. He looked at her, and she felt she had betrayed him, too, by not being truthful from the beginning. Did she really think she could have a different life? What right had she? You'll have to find yourself a new cook, Duke said. She's coming back where she belongs. You sure, ma'am? Duke's dark eyes burned with annoyance that this little cafe owner thought he could thwart him if he chose. Perhaps I should deal with him the same way I dealt with Johnny, he said, glancing down at Angel, eyes dark with impatience. Johnny who? Virgil asked.